This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
For over 35 years now, the Menendez brothers have sat behind bars for the brutal 1989 murders of their parents, Jose and Kitty Menendez. But despite decades of legal battles, appeals, and renewed push for resentencing, one question remains. Did they kill for money, or was it a desperate escape from a life of abuse? Today, we're breaking down the psychological side of the case with someone who knows how to separate emotion from hard evidence, retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffin-Daffer. Jennifer, I know we've talked about this case before, and if I'm right, correct me if I'm wrong, but from my memory, I think you believe that the prosecution got it right and Lyle and Eric pulled the trigger for dollar signs rather than because of the abuse. But let's say for a moment their father was the monster that they described. If you take a lifetime of psychological trauma, mix in the promise of total freedom, both from abuse and financial struggle, don't we end up kind of with a weird cocktail of motives that's a little more complicated than just greed alone?
Well, certainly, yes. But Tony, my issue with that case has always been that position that they were sexually abused was story number five. Mm-hmm. Three, four, and five, it started entering in various modes, right? The first story was from the boys, we think it could have been a mafia hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, the way it was all staged, right? You know, overkill, 12 bullets, shooting them in the back of the head and shooting their face off of your own mother, right? It was made to look so gruesome. What family member could possibly do this to, you know, their mother and father? So that was the first story, right? And then we go on to the second story that Mr. Menendez is a child, or is it not a child predator, but a predator.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyle Menendez tried to get his girlfriend to say and testify that he had raped her, mm-hmm. viciously and brutally raped her. And the girlfriend said, nah, I'm not going to say that because you know what? That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So then we move on to, okay, Eric was molested by Jose, and I was molested by Mama Kitty. That was the third story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they changed that. And then it went on to, okay, we were both molested by Jose, but I was only molested for when I was young, from like 8 to 10, but Eric was molested his whole life. And then finally it ends in story number five, which is a combination of four and self-defense, but very specific that they were getting ready to kill us that night.
Mm-hmm.
Took us out on a boat, and we know they were planning to kill us, so we had to take matters in our own hands. When you look at the conversion and to me, ridiculous stories that transpired, it just glares of something that wasn't true. And I just don't believe they were sexually molested, and I think it's an affront to all the children out there who were, male and female. It's sickening to me that they're using this excuse. That's how I feel about it.
But what about the other people who have come forward? The band member from Menudo who said that Jose had molested him. He alludes in one of the documentaries that there are other members that has not come forward or shared their story yet. One of them's dead that also had a story to tell. I mean, if that's true, and the thing is, when they started sharing their story, they didn't even connect the dots that this is the Menendez brothers' dad. He says that in the movie. I mean, it shows a pattern, at least over there with Menudo. Would it be that far of a stretch to think that this did occur over with the Menendez boys, but their thinking is just so flawed and messed up from years of that abuse that, you know, when they're trying to come up with their excuse, that's got to be a weird moment. It maybe not be as black and white as we think it is if we hadn't gone through all of that, or if they went through that. There's a lot of different things there. There's shame, there's guilt and all that. And it's the late 80s, early 90s, where all these things are not really looked at as a thing. So, I mean, did they feel like they had to say something else initially I mean, are there nuggets of reality in there is what I'm wondering. But then it all gets thrown out with the bathwater when, yeah, some of it is lies.
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, I think there's no quarrel that they were both emotionally abused mm-hmm. and mistreated and verbally abused and made to feel, you know, inept and insulted and all of that. That I do believe, because there's so many witnesses to that that witnessed that, that have no reason to lie. No one, by the way, witnesses any of this abuse, right? Mm-hmm. You know, nobody sees any sexual abuse or proof thereof. There's no doctors, there's no anyone. Even the psychiatrist that Eric went to when he was feeling guilty about killing his parents, then they both spoke freely to them mm-hmm. under the, you know, agreement, obvious relationship of physician and client, that they couldn't say anything. So they spoke freely and they never mentioned it to him in hours. But back to your original question.
Yeah.
The person who came forward from Menudo, I don't believe him is credible. Let me tell you why. First of all, he talks about when all this happened was in the early 80s. But guess when he decides to come forward? Does he come forward during trial one? No. How about trial two? No. How about any other time? Guess when he decides to come forward? Right before he's getting ready to do a docuseries deal. Mm-hmm. And I find that way too coincidental. And I think this all had to do with money for him and a way to worm his way onto this documentary. That's what I think.
It's one of those where you do have to break down all of the evidence and go, okay, what can we prove here? And the thing is, with obviously abuse and especially sexual abuse, there's not always a lot of evidence, especially if we're talking about things that happened near 40 years ago, to be able to prove it. That's why it's so up in the air. And of course, you know, you want to believe victims when they're being honest. And that's the hard thing that everyone has to wrap their mind around when somebody makes a claim. Is it real? And that's not always the easiest thing to do. Let me ask you this. Just if you're going to kill your parents and you're doing it for greed and you're doing it just to get that money, why would you do it in such a verbose way where it's this horrific murder scene? I don't know. I mean, I'm just, not that I'm planning on murdering anyone or I've ever thought of that, but it's like, if you're going to do it, why not do something a little less spectacular where it may be like, it's carbon monoxide poisoning, they died or something, you know, a little something that's not going to necessarily put a massive spotlight on you for a huge murder scene. Why do this?
I think it was twofold. I think the first and foremost, I do think the premeditation that was involved in this case, from the, you know, the getting an alibi early on, going to multiple stores, using false identification to purchase the guns, the bearing of the guns, just everything that they premeditated and did, I think that... you know, they're pretty smart. And I think they realized this, they were going to have to make this look gruesome. And this isn't a, you know, first time thought. A lot of murders are committed this way because they're trying to make it look so overkill that a family member couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And to explain away that, oh, we'll just say it's a mafia hit because of the business he was in. Second of all, there's also no doubt that these boys had no love lost for their dad mm-hmm. and their mom. You know, they really, I think the way they were treated, particularly by the father, and then their disrespect for the mother. And they talk about this actually with their psychiatrist after mm-hmm. the murders.
Yeah.
I mean, they say they took their mom's life because she was basically worthless as a human without him. Because she was just an alcoholic and I mean, yeah. How they talk about their mother is just so sickening
yeah.
That they just felt like she didn't even need to go on.
Yeah. And I mean, and if you're met with years of abuse and whatever that may be, whether it's just mental or sexual or physical, and the, you have the one person there that, that could be protecting you and doesn't. I can see where one may go, I have zero respect for that person. I have nothing. There's no love lost, like you said, you know, in a situation like that. But again, then to take it to that extreme of you're going to walk in and literally blow their heads off is just, but I guess to each their own in a certain way on the way some handle things like this. Now that it's back over here in California, the DA saying, I don't agree. I don't agree with the Gascon's, and I'm not going to recommend this, but it's up to a judge now where this goes, and maybe even Gavin Newsom intervening. Where do you think it's going to head in the following months?
Well, I think the judge will take the recommendations of the new DA, and I think that for a lot of reasons. First of all, this is not the first time that this rodeo has been fought. Mm-hmm. The reason is it's gone to appellate levels in the state and appeal levels in the federal jurisdiction, and it's always been turned down. There, you know, quote unquote, new evidence is what you mentioned with the Menudo band member combined with a letter mm-hmm. that's a photostatic copy that the individual who it was purportedly written to, you know, early on during this abusive stage, he testified. He never mentioned the letter. Mm-hmm. Eric Menendez testified. He never mentioned the letter.
No.
All of a sudden, this letter comes up, you know, purportedly found by a relative and, you know, is some sort of smoking gun. Only I would argue the evidence doesn't show that. If they had this letter, because it was written decades ago, why didn't the people who received it and the people that wrote it mm-hmm. talk about it on the stand?
Yeah.
No one mentioned it. So that doesn't pass the litmus test. I don't think it will get a new trial. I think the hope they do have is Gavin Newsom, because mm-hmm. he leans extremely liberal mm-hmm. in when it comes to crime, and I could see him affording them clemency, and if he does that, they will get out.
Yeah, I could see that being the end game here. I don't know. I pretty much agree with your assessment on how this is likely going to be playing out in the coming weeks. We shall see if they do end up getting the freedom that they have been seeking for so long in a case that we're never really going to truly know all the answers to.
The
world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.